The U.S. president warns China of consequences if it helps Russian forces in Ukraine. Beijing blames Washington for the war and says sanctions will hurt the global economy. So what's China's strategy on Ukraine and will it hurt relations with the West? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Fully Batibo. It's been nearly a month since Russia invaded Ukraine, and there's been no sign of any de-escalation. Russian forces have targeted several regions in the last few days, including the besieged city of Mariupol in the south. While the fighting rages on, world leaders are attempting to find a diplomatic solution. U.S. President Joe Biden and Chinese leader Xi Jinping spoke on the phone on Friday for the first time since the war began. Washington is concerned about Beijing's stance on the conflict. Chinese officials have refused to condemn the invasion. Biden has warned of consequences for China if it provides material support to Moscow. But the White House hasn't given details on what those consequences might include.
We have a range of tools that could be considered, and sanctions are certainly one tool in the toolbox, as they are for other countries as well, even if we, as we have not outlined specific consequences, and we'll communicate those directly to China and, of course, with our European partners and counterparts.
Meanwhile, China's ambassador to Ukraine has praised the strength of the Ukrainian people in a message that was a slight departure from the official line in Beijing. Ukraine state media quoted Fan Xingrong saying, China is a friendly country for the Ukrainian people. As an ambassador, I can responsibly say that our country will forever be a good force for Ukraine, both economically and politically. He says we'll always respect your state and develop relations on the basis of equality and mutual benefit. Here's Al Jazeera's Katrina Yu in Beijing now with more on the call between the U.S. and Chinese leaders.
According to Chinese readouts, it says that President Xi Jinping told Joe Biden that both countries had the responsibility to de-escalate tensions, that fighting was in nobody's interest. And also, he repeated China's stance that sanctions would not be effective in ending the war and would only serve to damage the global economy that was already struggling to recover from the pandemic. Now, we know for the U.S. part that Joe Biden emphasized that there would be material costs or there would be consequences for materially supporting Russia in its efforts to invade Ukraine, although the U.S. did not state what these consequences would be. U.S. officials have asserted that Russian officials have asked China for military support, military aid in the form of equipment in terms of helping to engage in this war, something that both Moscow and Beijing have denied. President Biden also went on to share his own view of the war and put forward the U.S. and its allies' efforts to stop Russia's invasion and presumably try to get China on board with that. However, we have seen no indication whatsoever that he was successful in this. And in fact, by the end of this call, as long as it did last, we've seen no sign whatsoever that China's position has changed.
Well, let's bring in our guests for today's Inside Story. In Beijing, Andy Mark, a senior research fellow at the Center for China and Globalization and a professor at Beijing Foreign Studies University. In Washington, Lawrence Korb, a former Assistant Secretary of Defense and a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. And in London, Zeno Leone, a lecturer in war studies at King's College London and an affiliate of the University Lao China Institute. A warm welcome to you all, gentlemen. Thank you for being on Inside Story. Andy Mark in Beijing, let me start with you, please. As Katrina said there in her report, the call between President Biden and President Xi doesn't seem to have changed anything in either leader's or either country's position. But you believe that this was a significant and an important call. Why is that?
I do believe this was an important call. I think, first of all, the framing in the Western media really is misleading, and really there being nothing more than dutiful stenographers for the U.S. government. If you read the Xinhua readout of the call. It makes three points. The first, that both presidents thought the call was constructive. The second point, which is the most important one, is that both presidents will instruct their people to take concrete actions to ensure that the China-U.S. relationship is back on the right track. And finally, the issue that is urgent and consuming the attention of the world is that both sides also agree that proper measures need to be taken to resolve the Ukrainian crisis. Mm. And I think it's the second point that's really important. And the key here is, can the U.S. muster the political courage that is necessary to honor the decisions taken during this call? So this is why I think this was actually a very, very important call.
Andy, you talk about the framing in Western media of this conflict. I wonder, how does Chinese public opinion view this conflict in Ukraine? Well, you know, on social media in the past few days, there seems to have been a shift in Chinese social media. How are they seeing this conflict? Isn't it bad PR for China to be sustaining these ties with Russia right now when civilians are being bombed?
Well, I think we have to separate public opinion in China from the official position. And public opinion, of course, matters. But what matters more, I think, is the government's position on this. And this has been consistent all along, that China has long said that it is on the side of peaceful development. And that I think a couple things I would maybe question here, that it's a month in and Russia still has not backed down. If we really understand the causes of this conflict, they're complex. Clearly, there are heated disagreements and, of course, violent disagreements on both sides of this question. But frankly, China has said that it is an impartial, neutral, and objective participant in this and not taking one side right. or the other, which I think is the only effective path to a peaceful solution.
Lawrence Korb, I'll ask you about this in just a second, whether China is a neutral participant. But I want to get your thoughts first on this call between President Xi and President Biden, this long phone conversation they had. Is it a watershed moment? Do you think, as Andy does, that this was an important call?
Oh, I think it was very important because really the ultimate future of what happens in Ukraine is dependent on both China and the United States. And so I think it was important for President Biden to connect with President Xi and explain to him what the United States would do if, in fact, China provides more aid to Russia, because right now, at least according to U.S. reports, Russia is running out of even ammunition and even food for the troops. And so if China doesn't provide that, then maybe Russia will be willing to negotiate with the Ukrainians, who have already announced they might pull back from their desire to join NATO.
So on the question of China's neutrality that Andy was talking about there, is China, do you agree with him that China is could be a neutral mediator in this conflict?
I think very definitely that China could, because China has very strong trade relations with Europe, which is part of this conflict. They're the only country in the world that really still has influence on Russia. I think it was very interesting that before Putin invaded, he went to Beijing to talk to Xi and didn't do it till the Olympics were over, so it wouldn't distract from China's attention on the Olympics. Yes, they do have it. The United States, its European allies, and even some countries in Asia have all come out against Russia. But if China continues to try and help them, it will be Russia will have less incentive to end this conflict on a negotiated solution.
Okay, Zeno, let me bring you into the conversation. And, you know, the slight and subtle change in rhetoric we've seen in Chinese media recently, in the last few days at least, when it comes to the war in Ukraine. They're focused on the humanitarian and the refugee crisis. The tweet also from the Chinese ambassador to Ukraine, quite significant. China providing humanitarian aid to Ukraine as well. How should we view this? Do you think China's position is evolving and has evolved since the conflict began?
I think since the conflict began, China's position substantially hasn't really changed. There was always great concern and great emphasis on the drama experienced by Ukrainian people and emphasis on trying to find a peaceful resolution. However, at least on a public level, China continues to be on the side of Russia. And of course, here, China has a dilemma, which is should it prioritize economic interest or political interest? Because if it was to prioritize economic interest, it would obviously try to make its conversation with the West, with Europe, more productive. But actually, China, we know that there's a pattern, right? We've seen this pattern during this crisis. China normally tends to prioritize long-term political interests. And China really needs, at this stage of its grand strategic trajectory, a partner, partners in plural, and certainly Russia is one of those. So I think China's position hasn't substantially changed. It's still on the fence, concerned for Ukraine, but not ready to let Russia go yet.
Okay, let's take a closer look now at China's economic ties with some of the key players in this crisis and what's at stake. U.S. trade with China has grown enormously in recent decades and is crucial for both nations. The United States imports more from China than from any other nation. In 2021, nearly half of China's $3.3 trillion in exports went to the U.S. and its allies. That number is far higher than its trade with Moscow, which hit a record annual high of more than $146 billion last year. And trade between China and the EU was worth more than $800 billion for the same period. Andy Mok in Beijing. Zeno says a difficult balancing act for China. What are the options then for Chinese leaders if this conflict drags on?
Well, I think, unfortunately, I think all indications, despite everyone's hope that it can be resolved soon, will likely drag on. I'm not sure that it really has much of an impact on China's stance or its policy decisions. I agree with Zeno that I think that really China's stance, despite some positive rhetoric from the or statements from the Ukrainian ambassador, as you said, really has not changed. And the economics of this does not play that big of a role. The important thing here, I think, that China's been very, very clear is that whether in Europe or whether in Asia, what it will not tolerate is any country undermining the security interests of other countries in the region. And this is a message that I think has been delivered very clearly and resolutely to the U.S., most recently in this call between the two presidents, Xi and Biden.
Lawrence Korb, do you agree with this? Andy says the economics of this don't play a big role.
I think an issue that's more important to China here is the whole question of Taiwan, because they see Russia claiming Ukraine back to part of Russia the same way that they see Taiwan as part of China. And that sort of goes in combination with the economic interests. They have both concerns. And I think that's really plays in this. In fact, what we hear from the call is when Biden started talking about Ukraine, China started talking about Taiwan. Mm-hmm. So that is very important to them, not just the economic consideration. But I think what Biden made clear to them is these economic consequences, as you just pointed out here, with the amount of trade with the U.S. and the European Union, could really have pretty severe consequences for China.
What consequences precisely would the Biden administration be considering here? Would the U.S. go as far as isolating China economically in the same way that Russia finds itself isolated and sanctioned today?
I think they would move in that direction. The real question, and Biden, I don't think Biden knows exactly now, because these obviously would have severe impacts on the United States as well as our European nations. So that really is the key question. So it's really up to China now, as we say in the U.S., the ball is in their court. They want to help Russia by providing ammunition right now, or they're going to maintain their neutrality and then try and start negotiations. Because remember, negotiations are already ongoing. I think China could play a positive role and tell Russia, you know, you can come out ahead with this. They'll recognize your annexation of Crimea. There'll be more independence in the Donbass region, and Ukraine won't join NATO, and you can declare that a victory.
Zeno, your thoughts about this. How likely is it that China could push Russia to end the war and withdraw from Ukraine?
So I think what we've learned from the meeting between Biden and Xi, and also in the last few months and from this crisis, is that actually there seems to be a bit of an hegemonic vacuum where nobody is able to really stop Russia. And also we need to understand that the international system of sovereign states, it doesn't work in a way that somebody in Beijing, only because China is a very influential power, can just pick up the phone and stop Putin doing whatever he's doing, especially when Ukraine is such a high stake for Russia. So on the one hand, China is probably the most likely player to be able to achieve something meaningful from a diplomatic point of view, because the EU, NATO, and the US clearly cannot at the moment. On the other hand, that doesn't mean that China has all this influence that many people think, and especially many in the US hopes that China would have on Russia. So, and this is also why China remains on the fence, because perhaps it wouldn't want to be seen as interfering directly with the conflict, trying to stop it, and then maybe failing, because that would have a negative impact on its influence. China would look like a great power that perhaps has only influence over small powers, but not in a major crisis like this one.
Mm. Andy, in Beijing, your thoughts about this?
Well, I like Lawrence's phrase that the ball is in someone's court, but I would say that the ball is in the U.S.'s court for two reasons. First, that Russia is nowhere near as isolated as the United States or Western media would like to make it out to be. First of all, let's look at India, who has very clearly said that they're looking to set up a rupee-ruble exchange with Russia to continue trading with Russia. Look at the OPEC countries, for whom Russia has been a very crucial voice on the UN Security Council, Pakistan, Iran. So I think the efforts to isolate Russia really are not going as well as the U.S. is portraying. And this will be doubly, if not triply true, for efforts to isolate China. Because while what Russia can do is threaten NATO and the U.S. with nuclear attacks, China is not only a nuclear power, it's an economic superpower. So it will be even more damaging, I think, to countries like the U.S. that would try to impose any kind of economic sanctions on China.
Let me ask you this about this viewpoint, Andy, that a lot of commentators are making right now, and that is President Xi was banking on Putin and his own country in China to form a unified, strong bloc against the West, another bloc against the West. I mean, a weaker Russia, whether they come out victorious from this war or not, I mean, would that not sit well with the Chinese? I mean, Russia, regardless of whether they win in Ukraine, will come out somewhat weaker from this conflict. Isn't that a concern for China?
Well, I think very briefly, China's worldview is that it wants to see a more just and humane order without any country engaging in these kind of power politics, Cold War thinking. But I think the more important point here
is that really the case? What about the issue of Taiwan? I mean, that was top of the conversation between President Biden and President Xi. Taiwan, the implications for Taiwan.
Yes. Sure. Well, again, Taiwan is the cornerstone of U.S.-China relations because China sees this as an internal matter and others around the world perhaps don't. But I think I want to really emphasize here that there's too much attention paid to the military conflict in Ukraine. But in fact, we need to focus on, I think, where the real battle is, which is economic. And what about if energy prices, food prices double and triple? What is that going to do to Europe? We're already seeing the early devastating impact from 3 million refugees come next winter if this conflict is still going on and energy prices double and triple, food prices are increasing. I think this will severely test, if not shatter, European unity. And in particular, Germany, I think many analysts in the financial world that focus on the energy sector say that Germany really should be much closer to Russia than the U.S., but it's taboo at this point to question Atlanticism.
Let's bring in.
So I think we have to see.
Yeah, we have to see indeed. Let's bring in Larry in Washington, D.C. Larry, your thoughts about this. How will this war define, first of all, future relations between the U.S. and China, but also between China and Europe? Lawrence Gold.
Well, I think it's going to have a great impact. I think our colleague from Beijing is right that there's going to be severe economic consequences for everybody involved. There are also going to be economic consequences for China, not just the United States. And it's very interesting that Andy mentioned Germany, because up till now, Germany had been leaning toward Russia. But after this started, Germany not only canceled the Nord Stream pipeline, but basically gave offensive equipment to Ukraine. In other words, Germany has ended its post-World War II policy of really remaining neutral and is becoming more aggressive. Nobody wins the longer this goes on. I agree. The real question is, can China and the U.S. come to an understanding that profits everybody? Because I think that China would like to see a new world order in which China and Russia sort of confront the United States and end the period of U.S. hegemony. And that's going to be the real question. How does this end? And he's right. The whole world doesn't support it. But I am really surprised that Asian countries, Singapore, Japan, they have also joined in putting these sanctions on. So it's really, I think it's a pivotal moment for the international community here, how this ends up, because the ramifications will go on for decades.
Okay, Zeno Leoni in London, your thoughts. Can China and the U.S. come to an understanding? And what will Russia's success or failure in Ukraine mean for, you know, global security in the years to come and the global economy?
So it's a very pivotal moment for the world order. And first of all, to answer your first question, the problems between the U.S. and China, they are structural and they go beyond this crisis. We have just forgotten about those problems because now Ukraine is on the front page of every newspaper. Why is a pivotal moment for the world order? The world order is already somehow experiencing a degree of decoupling. On the one end, the US trying to move beyond the liberal order with the Build Back Better world of Joe Biden, decoupling in some areas from China. China is trying to do exactly the same with the Common Prosperity Campaign, the Westernization. So this crisis, it's pivotal because it might accelerate this trend, this partial decoupling. And so it's very critical for us to understand and to see where the partnership between China and Russia is going, because if it holds, there might be quite an important acceleration of this trend of decoupling, where we will see two partially detached spheres of influence. The Chinese one still very much in the making, looking at the developing world, and the US one, which will probably include those countries, those few countries that have joined in imposing sanctions against Russia, so Australia, Japan, Canada, and the EU.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for a very interesting discussion. Andy Mock.
Great conversation.
And Zeno Leoni, a great conversation indeed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you for watching. You can always watch this program again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And of course, you can join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is at AJInsideStory. From me, Fully Batibor, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. Bye for now.